you know, glad to be here. I think what you're doing is very important. I think raising awareness about this, having people feel not alone, having people, you know, realize that this is something very common, treatable, that there are, you know, better days ahead.
But to be fair, that's sometimes how therapy works too. Sometimes you have to have a few wrong answers before you find the right one.
Yeah.
If you could please just increase your volume just a little bit.
Welcome to season 5. Who knew we'd make it this long?
Hey, everybody.
Welcome back, everybody, for another 2 weeks of Bipolar Girl Beyond. I guess we're tired, huh?
Yeah, we just got we drove from Massachusetts last night and we didn't get in until 3:30 this morning. And the puppy had me up at 6. So it's been a long day.
And not only that, like, you know, last night I couldn't help because people that know me, I'm blind as a bat. And so like last night it was dark coming from Massachusetts, but then also it was raining. And so I
drove the whole way.
So she drove the whole way. I was trying to be a good like captain, first lieutenant, and I'm sitting over there like nodding the entire time.
He's falling asleep.
And then I wake up and I'm like,
Are you okay?
So if we sound a little exhausted, that's why. Welcome back to another week. We have Rachel Kaplan this week and we'll get more into the interview, but right now it's time for us to go around the horn to talk about how was your week.
Is that the right one?
I think that's the right one. Let's just go with it. Let me see.
So my week was good and not a whole lot happened. We haven't been doing much. It's been quiet. I've been fighting with the puppy. He doesn't particularly care for my cats, and my cats don't particularly care for him. So we're trying to introduce them and get them to all be friends. And that takes a lot of work and time.
I think you're being very kind. We have a lot going on, but we're just still not ready to talk about it, I guess. We've been dropping breadcrumbs all over the place, but I did suspend my campaign today.
Go ahead.
Well, this is not a show about the campaign, but I'm just saying that's what's happening in my life is that, you know, I'm taking what I learn. We'll run again another time, but right now we're suspending. So, we don't have to have the music anymore. That was a nice little transition.
Yeah.
Amy, how was your week?
We can't hear you, Amy.
Amy. Yeah, while Amy is kind of getting her technical tissues, you know, why does it always seem like Amy has more books in the back every week? It's like she reads like 50 books a week.
Probably because she does.
She's super smart. Like, so anyway, yeah, so, okay, let's just say, like, people don't care about their lives on the road, by the way. I mean, that's what we have to talk about. People drive fast, they drive crazy. I mean, we literally thought we were going to die at some point on 95 or wherever we were coming back.
Merritt
Parkway, going through New York, it's the worst. And my condolences to, you know, to all the people across the world who are dealing with family members who are, you know, watching what's happening on the TV, and we don't have to talk about it, but just my thoughts and with everyone and let's wish for a sort of a peaceful outcome. Rachel,
there you go, Amy.
You ready?
Is this better?
Yes.
Yeah, that's way better.
Yep. Perfect.
Way better. Go ahead, Amy. Tell us
how was your week?
How's your 2 weeks?
Not enough time to read all the books. honestly, a pretty ordinary week. Not a lot going on over here. Left my cat turned a year and a half old.
Did you have a little, like, party?
Oh, yeah, and she got presents.
Yes.
That's so sweet.
And I took her down to visit her friend, who's one of the door staff at my building.
Okay.
And there were some kids down there who wanted to pet her, and that went very nice. She was an extremely good girl for that.
Very good.
Well, I could tell you our new
basically
puppy.
It was a book nerd cat mom kind of week.
Ah. Well, when we were out, it was kind of cute. When we were out with the dogs, because the dogs were with us last night, and we stopped so they could go potty. And there was a guy parked in the parking lot that we were in, and he was like, "Are they friendly? Are they friendly?" And we were like, "Yeah." And he asked if he could pet them, and he was like, "I just need some doggy love." And they were really good, and they let him pet them, and they gave him kisses, and it was cute. So I was glad that they behaved well for that.
I don't know. It was kind of strange. Guy just comes leaning out of the car, but it turned out he just like was in need of a little.
Needed some love,
pet care. Yeah. Yeah.
How has your week been, Rachel?
Not entirely the best because I've been sick. But usually my weeks are good. I really enjoy my job. I'm a recovery support specialist.
Oh, very nice.
That's.
And you said the facility you work at was over 200 years old.
Yeah, the Institute of Living in Hartford, Connecticut. Yeah, it was founded in 1823.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. That's exactly why we wanted to have you on the show this week, just to kind of talk about your body of work and mm-hmm. and what you're up to up there in Connecticut. In fact, we just
drove through Hartford.
If I knew that, we would have just stopped off, stayed with you and done did the show for your house. Like, you know,
Hey, Rachel.
Yeah. I mean, seriously, I mean, we drove right down. What is it? 84, 83.
I don't remember the name.
Through Fairfield.
Oh,
so we were a little east of Hartford this time, but we certainly have a friend that's in, certainly have a friend that's in that grew up in Hartford. Her father actually used to be chief of police out there or charge of the sheriff's department, something like that.
So tell us more about your work. What does a recovery specialist do?
So I'm a recovery support specialist or RSS. And the way it works is in order to become one, you have to have experienced mental illness or substance abuse. And now be in recovery, which is defined by you. And then you could take a 3-month course and become certified as a recovery support specialist. And I'm very lucky. I work in a great program at the IOL, the schizophrenia rehab program. So I work with people who have, they have to have either schizophrenia or schizoaffective disorder, but a lot of them have bipolar as well. Mm-hmm. It's actually a type of schizoaffective. So I have a lot I can connect with people there, and I just try to, you know, give them hope and talk to them, and, you know, it's very chill. I get to know them really well, and they get to know me, and I share my story and my experiences during the groups, and I lead a couple groups, that we don't bill for because insurance, but, yeah, I help lead the other groups too, and it's just a really fun job. We have a lot of great conversations, and I've made really great connections, and it's really nice because I've worked there for over a year, and I've never once felt lonely since I started working there because I get so much socialization there, and I'm not even the most. I used to not be a very social person, but I love it there. So,
very nice. So it helps you as much as it helps others.
Yeah, I think so. That's a common trend when you're helping people.
Did you grow up in Hartford?
I grew up in Connecticut. I've moved around to different parts of Connecticut. Mm-hmm. I was born in Hamden, then I moved to Orange, then I was in Washington, then I went to college in Massachusetts, then I came back down. I was in Danbury. Now I'm in Meriden, but I work in Hartford.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you've been all over the place.
Yeah.
All over Connecticut.
What college did you go to in Massachusetts?
Clark University. It's in Worcester, Massachusetts.
Oh, yeah. I know Clark very well. Very good school. Cool. I graduated from Northeastern. That's why I know.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what made you get into this field of practice?
So I have bipolar, but I didn't know that till I was 24, but I started having symptoms, and when I was 14, And so I went to therapy, and then I decided, oh, I want to be a therapist. So I was going to college for that, but then that didn't really work out. But then I finally got into recovery after many years of struggling. And then the psychiatrist who had helped me suggested, who works at Hartford Hospital, suggested that I become an RSS. And yeah, the rest is history.
And so, and do you have anybody helping you, you know, care through this as well? Do you have a partner or family, good network?
Yeah, I have a very good network. My family's very supportive, and I'm part of a program in my building. It's a normal apartment building, but I'm part of a program where they help us with our medication, and they take us, like, shopping and stuff.
Oh, that's great.
So I have a good support system.
That's excellent. Amy? Thanks.
Sounds like they've got some really good game over there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, really know how to do it right.
Yeah.
So is an RSS, Amy, is that something that's a lot of states do, or is it just like a Connecticut thing, or?
I mean, what do you know about it, Rachel? Like,
Well, I remember when I was taking the class, it was over Zoom, and we had some people from North Dakota. So mm-hmm. I'm assuming they have it there, too. It's a relatively new field. Like, Hartford Hospital's only offered the course for a few years. But they're expanding it. They're trying to hire more RSSs, and the class is becoming much more popular. So hopefully it'll become more popular as time goes on.
Right. And then the question will be finding jobs for everybody. I think,
yeah,
you know, getting the class sure. going, I feel like there would be a lot of people who'd want to do that, but then trying to find facilities willing to pay for that would be a hard part.
Yeah, for sure. It took me, well, so I did the program, then I did an internship that they set me up with. Mm-hmm. It was paid, but then it took me over a year to find this job, but I think it was worth the wait, and I hope that I mean, yeah, the odds are they're probably rolling people faster than they can hire them, but I mm-hmm. do hope a lot of them can either get jobs as RSSs mm-hmm. or there was a girl in my program who was interning as an RSS, and she's decided through it that she wants to be a psychiatric nurse, so she's applying to become a psychiatric technician. So it's not the same thing as recovery support specialist, but the experience will help.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure that happens pretty...
would be great for if we could get recovery support specialists in groups where maybe there's a psychologist or another kind of therapist leading it, but then the peer support specialist there is there to kind of add a totally different element?
Yeah, that's like how it is most of the time. I work with psychologists, so they lead the groups, but I help, and sometimes I take the notes for them and stuff.
I could see how that would be a good...
to help people express what they mean, because you've been there.
Yeah,
Yeah,
they often ask me about my experiences, and I talk about, you know, I've talked about a lot of stuff there. I've talked about, like, how it runs in my family, how different experiences I've had with different therapists, what's worked, what hasn't worked. And just, I think it's just good. I understand what it's like to have depression and mania. So I haven't heard voices a lot of people there have, but I could relate to a lot of the other stuff. Yeah, I think it's a really good feel that they started, because it's really helpful to have someone who knows what it's like to go through those things there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's probably a good starting point for, like, people who want to go into, like, psychiatric nursing, right? Like, it's a good way to get your feet wet and to feel what it's like, and then to make the choice to go into more of a schooling kind of environment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm.
Have you thought of taking it to another level?
Well, I was thinking of getting a master's in social work like I had planned to do originally when I finished college, but it kind of just didn't work out this year. But maybe next year. You know, we'll see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Very nice.
I know they're so short on social workers that basically all the licensing. You can practice independently as soon as you get your first level license in Illinois.
Oh, really?
So
usually the first level of license is where, like, you can practice, but only with a licensed supervisor to take their test before you practice independently under your own authority as a social worker. we're so short of qualified social workers that people directly out of school can start practicing under their own authority now.
Oh, wow.
My friend Dee, who graduated Northeastern with me, she went on and she's a licensed therapist now. She's also, she's moving from Florida to Massachusetts. And she was telling me that, you know, she does telehealth, that she's switching her license. She's going to fully become licensed in Massachusetts because it's all you automatically get reciprocity back to Florida through the insurance companies, because I guess the way the system is set up. So she, instead of like just adding on, using Massachusetts add on, Massachusetts is getting ready to become a primary. And the biggest thing about that is that, like, first of all, therapists in Florida are like a dime a dozen, but Massachusetts, there's like a shortage. So like she's getting ready to increase her business by, you know, whatever number, but exponentially.
And she gets to keep all of her therapists, she gets to keep all of her therapy clients from Florida.
Right. She's not going to lose anything.
Nice.
That's great. Yeah. Yeah, there's definitely a big need, and definitely we're not getting people fast enough. So.
Right. No, that's.
Yeah, my boss even said, I'm not totally sure what this means, but she said next year, like Medicaid might consider funding more things that RSSs do. Mm-hmm. I don't know the details, though. But yeah, they definitely need people.
Right. Right. No, I totally agree. Now this is great, and this is rich. I often talk about these types of wraparound services for individuals who are living, you know, and battling mental illness on a day-to-day basis. What's it like on a day-to-day basis living where you're living?
Where I'm living, so I live in just a normal apartment. I have my own apartment, but I get help from staff there with my medication. So I go down every morning at 7 o'clock. I get my medications, and I go to work 5 days a week. And I love my job. We start out, we have like a staff meeting in the morning. Then we have three groups. The first group is always the assessment group. So we ask people how they're doing, you know, and then we have to get to everybody, that's no exceptions. And then the other groups, there's a lot of different types. We have like creative expressions or metacognition or like different, sometimes skill building, sometimes discussion. And I really enjoy helping out with that and sharing my experiences and commenting on what people say. And then in a couple of those groups, I take the notes, which allows the other staff members to have less to do, which is nice. And then we have lunch. I eat with the clients. And then most days we have another group, sometimes two groups that are not in the regular program time, but anyone can stay later for. So we have the creativity group, which I lead. We have the games group, which I lead, the peer support group, which I co-lead. And then we have a healthy living group, which a psychologist or social worker will lead, but I'll help out with and bring in information, which is good because I've been working on my own health. I'm actually almost done with my third book. I've published two books before. And my third book, it's going to be called The God Who Knows. And it deals with a lot of different things, but it talks about spirituality and healthy eating. So I've been learning a lot by writing it. So I get to bring that to the group, which is really nice because I love looking up random information, but usually it's like, well, I'm going to use this, but now I can use it by teaching it to people at work.
Very nice. What are your two books about?
So my first book is Ruby's Secret to Happiness. It's a novel. It talks about mental health and happiness. And then my second book is How to Find Happiness in a Crazy World. And it's a self-help book. I really enjoyed writing it. It talks about all the tips I used ever since I got on the right treatment plan to become a healthier, happier person. And I think it could really help people because I've become an extremely happy person. So I think I have a lot of good tips to share.
And how long ago were you diagnosed?
When I was 24, so 4 years ago.
Okay.
And what are some of your tips? Would you give one free for everyone listening? A teaser.
Sure. sure. Well, this is kind of a cliche, but one of the first chapters is about gratitude, and it talks about how gratitude isn't just making a list of things you're grateful for. It's also like if someone, the example I use, like if someone gives you a dirty look, you can be grateful, well, at least I'm not in a bad mood. And it can be helpful with, you know, making problems not seem as big. And then I also talk about the concept of a term I came up with, or at least I think I came up with, called happiness capitalism. And the idea behind it, I don't take a viewpoint on it. So if you like capitalism or not, I don't take a side. But the idea is that if you have even just a little bit of happiness, you can capitalize upon it and turn it into more happiness. But we also have to recognize that some people who are severely depressed don't have any happiness, so they don't have happiness to work with. So I've been on both ends of it. I've been both where it worked out horribly and where it's worked out really well. So I share both of those.
Very nice. I have a hard time with gratitude. Everybody always says, you know, start a gratitude journal. And I'm just like,
That doesn't work for me. What I like to do is just try to appreciate the moment by realizing how many amazing things have happened for the moment to be possible. So like if I'm, I like to, before I start work, I get there a little early. I like to take a walk outside. And so I appreciate that I have the job and that the campus is so beautiful and that it's a nice day. And all these things have to be true in order for me to take my walk. So instead of seeing it just as a walk, seeing it as a lot of bigger things.
That's actually a very good idea to look at it that way rather than like sit down every morning and write out what you're grateful for.
I recently tried that I actually came up with 105 things, but it didn't make me feel any more grateful because I was already grateful for those things. So you know, different things work for different people.
Yeah, I was gonna say, plus you're from New England, so the idea that you can turn the other cheek without yelling at someone, you know, to return in the favor, that's huge. That's like groundbreaking.
Yeah.
Look, I know about the bird. So, this is amazing, and I want to know how you have you received any feedback from the wider community about how your book has impacted them.
My family's really enjoying my book. I actually had one family member who's who I'm not even that close to, but she has a son who has mental illness, and she really enjoyed my second book. And she was just very impressed that I was someone who had gone through depression and mania, but now was so happy and had all this advice to give. So I think probably the biggest impact is on her. But also some of the clients at my job have borrowed the book because we have a little library there. So they bought a copy of my book and they've said it's been helpful.
Oh, that's very cool.
That's always nice when you put your heart into something and somebody is like, oh, it helped me. Like that makes it worth it, right?
Really nice. And the nice thing is I publish through Amazon. So not only is it really good royalties, but also I get to publish whatever I want. So it's not being made into something that's generic.
Got it. Yeah, a lot of people, I'm not in the mental health world, but in a book world that I'm in, a lot of people talk about publishing with Amazon.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good because it's free. They could print like all these copies and it's good royalties. It's definitely, I would suggest it.
Very nice. Well, I'm just going to ask.
Rachel, how did you feel like the first day your book was coming out on Amazon?
I was, I guess for my first book, I was very excited. I was, I was a big deal. I've dreamed of being an author since I was 8, because that's when I started writing short stories. So it was a pretty big deal for me to actually have something published. And it was pretty cool. And then my second book, I've been doing a little more promotion. At Hartford Hospital, they have their own magazine. So they did a story on me, but it hasn't come out yet for some reason, but eventually. And now I'm trying to promote, soon to be 3 books by doing podcasts and just trying to get the word out there with people.
Mm-hmm. How many, which other podcasts have you done?
This is my second. I've done Bipolar Recorder. By Hunter Keegan.
Is he still around?
We've had Hunter Keegan on.
Oh, you did.
Is Hunter these days?
Yeah, he gave a speech at Penn State.
Very nice.
Last time I checked, he moved out west. So is he back here now?
He says he lives in Virginia.
Interesting.
Okay.
Fascinating.
Oh, Hunter. He was one of our first
people. I liked Hunter's
book
because it was just like so real and in your face about everything.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, it was. Well, I have to ask, because it is coming up on Halloween, do you have big Halloween plans? Are you dressing up? Are you...
No, I haven't really dressed up since I stopped trick-or-treating, but I hope that someone at my one of my clients will dress up for something, because that'd be cool.
That'd be cool. Do you guys... Yeah. I know you're in an apartment. Do you guys get trick-or-treaters?
No, I've had 4 Halloweens here. We've never gotten trick-or-treaters.
Oh, that's too bad.
Can we just say that, like, the nostalgia of, like, Halloween and everyone being in the neighborhood and knocking on everyone's doors, I can't say that I've fully experienced that every Halloween. Like, it's usually... Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like, is this just another one of those Rockwellian... type experiences that only happen on the movies?
No, I mean, here in our neighborhood, we do it every year, but we have such long driveways that we just all sit at the edge of our driveways with candy.
Yeah, I mean...
We don't do the knock on the door thing.
Right.
Because our driveways are so... We're in the country, so it's just easier if we're all at the edge of the property.
Yeah, it's too much. It's too much. Yeah, so...
Well, what are you doing for spooky season, Amy?
Oh, let's see. I'm moving a few clients around so I can take a couple hours off to do trick-or-treat at the building. So they give those of us who wanted to give candy just little like doorknob cards to put on our doors so the kids would know which houses or which apartments had candy for them and they could knock.
Oh, nice.
And then something I've been doing since like maybe 2007 or 2008, a history museum I volunteer at has haunted tours of the neighborhood. And this would be like... Back in the 19th century, this was one of the most neighbors in the city. So there's not only a fair few hauntings, but some really spicy scandals to report on. So I'm basically going to be going like mid-19th century hoop skirt type morning gear, telling stories and like ghost stories and spicy scandals of neighbor.
So
and giving tours. And it's always super popular.
That sounds like fun.
This is
like this year, I think we're going to have 4 people doing tours at once.
Wow, busy.
This is so cool. We need to be with Amy.
We need to be with Amy.
Yeah. Amy always has the cool stuff going on. I mean, seriously, like, I don't know. Like, there've been other places where we've lived, and it's like, you get, like, one trick-or-treater, maybe.
Yeah, we never got a lot in D.C.
No.
But you also have to understand, we didn't get a lot of trick-or-treaters because we were out trick-or-treating.
That's true. I don't know, like, you know, in Massachusetts, for example, like, Halloween is, like, New England, like, Halloween is, like, ooh, sorry,
It's a big deal.
It's like Christmas, you know?
It's a big deal.
Spooky World and all these really cool things.
Salem
and all this really cool stuff. Are you coming to Salem, Amy?
Eventually, I think I need to.
I want to go to Salem, too. I haven't been.
Oh, that means you have to...
I went once. Yeah.
How is it? Is Salem awesome?
Yeah, I went as a kid. We went to this this place where they told, like, the story of the witch trials, and then they had, like, a little museum, and, yeah, it was cool.
Burn those witches.
Yeah. No!
Burn them at the stake.
No, well, no, That takes us to our word. What is our button for the word?
The word, the proverb.
The proverb, okay. So it's not really a proverb, it's a quote. It's from Oscar Wilde, and I kind of went with it because it's spooky season. And it says, the mask tells us more than the face. And I kind of liked that with mental illness, too, because a lot of the times, at least for me, with bipolar and being depressed and stuff, sometimes you have to wear a mask and you have to put on your face. To go out into the world. And I think that says a lot about you when you're able to do that, because that takes a lot of strength to do. So, yeah, the mask tells you more than the face. What do you say, baby?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think the same thing. I think, you know, we all have to wear sometimes unfortunate faces in public when we might be crumbled or crushed on the inside. And I think this kind of smacks of that. Amy, what about you?
You know, I like your interpretations. Also, Oscar Wilde wrote a fantastic novel called The Picture of Dorian Gray.
Yes, I'm reading it.
Oh, I love that book.
Don't give it away. Don't give anything away. I'm almost done with it, but I've been reading it. It's wonderful. How about you, Rachel? What do you take from it?
Yeah, it's definitely true. Sometimes you gotta wear a mask, but I found I've had a couple jobs, including this one, where it really helped me kind of to wear a mask, like pretend to be cheery and happy. I mean, I am happy now, so it's not a mask in my current job, but when I was working at a movie theater while I was depressed, I would always try to be perky and nice, and it kind of made me feel a little better. So it's, but then other times I would have to pretend and it sucked because I was just holding it all in. So I guess it depends. Masks can be tough, but sometimes it's good.
I like that. Okay. Well,
that, and you know, talking about looking happy, like, and then actually being happy, I feel like people underestimate what an accomplishment it is to be genuinely happy and how hard you have to work for that.
Oh yeah.
You know how many people are just miserable?
About that and how to find happiness in a crazy world. I've tried. Mm-hmm. I had to try out a lot of different things, and the way I see my progress is that while I was not properly being treated for bipolar, it seemed like I wasn't. You know, sometimes it seemed like I was making progress, but then I just go back.
Mm-hmm.
But now that I'm, you know, luckily I have the right support system and treatment plan. So I'm able to look back on those times, not everything, obviously, but I look back on those times and it really helps me a lot be happy and be grateful and not take things too seriously. So, yeah, most people, I think, you know, some people could just be happy their whole lives, but I think a lot of people, you kind of need to fail at things for a while in order to learn.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And there's also science behind the fact that if you force yourself to smile, it actually does tend to make you a little bit happier rather than.
Yeah, at least in the short term. Yeah,
short term. If you kind of fake it till you make it, it can sometimes help.
You know, I'm glad she said that because sometimes I have to tell her that and she's like, there's no faking it.
Yeah, there's no faking it. I don't want to fake it before I make it.
Yeah, that's. It's interesting because, like, sometimes in life I think about days where, you know, I have to either smile or, you know, still rise up for the task and do the job, and I really don't want to do it. And it's more times than not, you know, people always think, oh my God, Stephen, you're just such a people person. You just love people. I'm like, yeah, but I also, like, I like my me time too.
Yeah.
You know, like. So, you know, at some point, some days I like to revert back to being a child, my little G.I. Joe man, and just sit there and just play with them. Or WWF wrestling. My dad, you know, grandma won't get into that, but, you know, he wouldn't let me play with my wrestling men, you know, because they were in underwear.
They were men in tights.
Men in tights. I was like, dude. Right? Like, man. So anyway. No, Rachel, I want to thank you for promoting your book and while telling us more about your life. Why don't you tell everyone where they can find your book?
Sure. So it's on Amazon. So I have 2 out right now. Eventually I have 3. The first one is called Ruby's Secret to Happiness. And the second one is called How to Find Happiness in a Crazy World. And do you think it'd be possible for you to put links? I could send you the
Absolutely.
Links.
Absolutely.
Okay, great.
Yeah, we'll put links up so they can find you and go straight to you, okay?
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome. Right. Thanks for coming on the show tonight.
Thanks for having me. The song,
because it's spooky season, I'm going to play Psycho Killers by the Talking Heads.
Okay, so, nice. All right, everyone.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Let's see if I can get it to play.
Did you? Yeah.
There we go.
My best. killer. Escassé.
To turn us back up.